Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and today we have our second installment of our World of the Play series that we're doing with our partner, Everyman Theater. We're going to delve deeply into themes raised in each of the plays in their season. Today, we're listening to the panel I moderated on their Crimes of the Heart play, written by Beth Henley. It's about three sisters in Mississippi. When the play was released in the early 80s, women playwrights were producing far less than their male counterparts. And over 30 years later, there's still gender inequalities in the theater, but times are changing. But why aren't women playwrights heard on our stages the way they should be? We discussed this and more last Saturday at Everyman Theater. Let me introduce our panel. This is going to be a conversation about women in theater. Women in theater and how it affects our culture. To my left, Teresa Eyring is with us. She's a Baltimorean, grew up in the city, and executive director of the Theater Communications Group, CCG, in New York. She started out at Woolly Mammoth and just jumped and leapt there. You can read all of her biography here. She got her MFA from Yale School of Drama and is now running, I think, one of the most significant organizations in theater in our country. Jacqueline Lawton is to my right. Jacqueline Lawton is one of our leading playwrights. She's an amazing playwright. I've read several of her plays. I've not seen them yet, but I've read her plays. Her play, The Hampton Years, is mind-boggling, to say the least. And she's part of America Arena Stage's American Voices and the New Play Institute. She's just an amazing thinker, writer, and theater person. Can't hear? Is this better? I can talk a lot more loud. Lee, I have no problem. So we'll do a theater exercise. It's called projecting. So we'll project. And Jackson Breyer is with us. Dr. Jackson Breyer is Professor Emeritus of English at the University of Maryland College Park. He's written incredible books like the Letters of Eugene O'Neill. He was a friend of Beth Henley, who wrote this play, interviewed her intimately. I read those interviews that he did with her. Understands our world of theater in some really important ways. And so this is just an incredible panel to gather here for all of you here at Everyman Theater. So welcome, and welcome to the panelists. Let's begin. I want to start with, we're going to delve really deeply into the question of women in theater, because it's from the 1890s to now, it's had this interesting history of women in theater and how it's kind of changed the nature of theater. But I want to start with the play that we just saw, that you saw, the two of you just saw.
Right.
And one of the things you said to me, I think, was interesting just in terms of what the roots of this play were. And you talked to me about Beth Henley's love of Chekhov and how this was kind of a very Chekhovian experience, but through a woman's eyes, looking at a very complex world. Right?
Well, on this cheat sheet that I gave everybody, she says that one of the key moments in her life is she was, I think, in graduate school, and they were going to do Three Sisters, and she wanted to try out for it. And she was an actor at that point, and she went to see the Cherry Orchard in New York, the all-black production, actually, with James Earl Jones as Lapine. And the moment in the Cherry Orchard, which many of you know, when Lapine comes back after he's bought the Cherry Orchard, and he has that incredible speech where he is crying and laughing, and he is tremendously happy that he's bought the Cherry Orchard, but also tremendously ashamed because he has deprived this woman who's he's admired all his life of her most prized possession. And as she says in this interview, she realized you could have those kinds of moments on stage that veered between laughing and crying. And of course, you just saw in Crimes of the Heart a moment just like that when Lenny and Babe are laughing and crying about old granddaddy in a coma. And she is attracted, as Chekhov is, to those moments that veer between tragedy and comedy. And that's very Chekhovian. And of course, this play is a kind of riff on Three Sisters, obviously. A sort of American Southern Three Sisters, if you will. They don't want to go to Moscow, but they have aspirations. They have things that they want to do.
Right. But I'm curious how you
all think that the kind of rise of Beth Henley and women in that period when she first wrote this play, how did it begin to change things? I mean, was that, you know, she kind of exploded onto the scene with this play in ways that many people didn't expect in this play at all. So what do you think that meant? Jacqueline, how would you define that?
Well, for me, it holds two things, two places in the American theater and in the social landscape of America, that women can command entire stories, entire worlds. They can command them with great vulnerability, strength, power, ambition, as we talked about, and that it's worthwhile. It's worthwhile for 2.5 hours to engage in the lives of these women, of these sisters, and you have a play that navigates in and around the impact of men, but it's at the center are these women's lives, and I think that's really quite significant. And each woman gets to take on a role that a lot of women struggle with. So you have one who's married, and that seems to be the most ideal thing that you look forward to, but it's a marriage of great darkness and sadness, and it's something that she's hidden, this idea of domestic abuse, which is something that is often hidden and quite tragic, and things that we still don't really even know how to understand or negotiate in terms of families. And you have the one sister who cannot have children. And the definition that if you are a woman, it means you are a mother. And then what happens if you're a woman who wants children but can't have children? What then is your role in society? And so we see her struggle around how to live in the world as that. And then you have another woman who's so full of her sexuality and her ambition and her drive for success and fame, and who's turned away from a man who might have possibly given her a safe comfort of a home. And I read it when I was an undergrad, when I was still learning how to be a playwright, and I am from Texas, I'm from the South, this idea of strong women, and I was just so excited to see that there was a play, and I am a sister as well, so that explored these women, the celebration of beauty of these women, and they were not apologetic at all for any of their spaces and existence on Earth. That's what I think of the power of it.
I mean, and one of the things that I think that Beth Henley brings is that she, and you said this to me, it made me think about this, was that, you being Jacqueline Lawson, these women own their own sexuality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They control it. And in some senses, that's what, I mean, it's not just in terms of sexuality, but other issues as well. The need and power of women penning plays is that perspective.
Exactly. I mean, you hit the nail on the head, because I think, I think that male playwrights can craft stories of women quite effectively, but I think that the sexuality of women and the desires of women often are really, truly best expressed by women writers. Mm-hmm. And I love, Jackson talked about the almost the absurdity, those moments of absurdity where there's laughter and tragedy and almost things that you would consider disgraceful cohabitating. I in this play, I think it's really, really interesting, just the fact that almost never do the sisters discuss the fact that she shot her husband.
Yeah.
There's just the discussion of the affair she's having with a young man in the neighborhood, but they never, have this moment where they sit around the kitchen table and say, now, what's going to happen to you, and why did you do it? So there was just something really humorous about that to me, and a little bit absurd and beautiful the way that she did that.
Mark, I'll tell you a funny story. I told Mark that I first encountered this play as a manuscript. It had not been published. It was sent to me because Center Stage was going to do a production of it, and they wanted somebody to write the program note. I knew nothing about Beth. I knew nothing about the play. You can imagine getting in a brown envelope the script of this play, I who see an awful lot of awful new plays. And shortly after I read it and shortly after it had been done, a woman friend of mine said to me, any woman who can write a line that says, I shot him because I just didn't like the way he looked, really understands women. And I think that's exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
No man could have written that line. No man could have written that line. I mean, that's...
I think that's true.
That's true. And what I wonder about, Jacqueline, you put your finger on those three women so beautifully. Do you think Beth could have written that play today? In other words, all of those women, in some ways, when the play starts, are apologizing or at least hesitant to admit to the very thing you're talking about. Have we gotten farther now so that they might not be so hesitant to admit to it? In other words, would Meg have made that choice that was hard to make, in other words, to give up Doc and pursue a professional career, would Lenny have been so apologetic about not having children now when not having children is more accepted by society? In other words, how much is have we progressed, do you think?
I think that's a really great question, and I think we what we have to remember is that it's placed in the South. So we are in 2014, and the South does recognize that on the calendar that it's 2014, but there are a great many prevailing attitudes that have not quite caught up to that. So what I think, a playwright writing it now, what I love so much about this play is that it's not an issue play. It doesn't feel to me like an issue play. It's a play about sisters coming around, the celebration of, yes, a birthday, a forgotten and then remembered, oh my gosh, let's get the biggest cake we could possibly ever buy birthday. But then also the tragedy of, okay, our little sister's going to go to jail and perhaps committed. And I think that if this play were written now, it might tinge a bit more on issue in a way that we are so spared of now. Mm-hmm. You know, does that make sense?
So,
I think it would just be really a different lens now.
I think that that kind of leads to some of the things we're thinking about around women in theater, that Beth Hanley wrote this play. What year was it this play came out first? It was
78.
Thank you, Vinny.
Right, yes.
78. 78, 77 wasn't sure. It was 78. See, so it's 1978. The first woman to win a Tony for directing anything was 1998.
Oh, that's right.
Right?
Yeah.
and now we're seeing this explosion of women playwrights on the scene, and directors, even though they're not all on Broadway all the time, but all over. So let's talk about where the changes are taking place. I mean, you know, this was kind of the root of it, I think. Now, this play, Bethany, she was one of the roots of this explosion we're experiencing today.
Absolutely. Well, you talked about, when you were introducing us, you talked about how there's been such change in theater since, I think you said, 1890. And I'm thinking, we talk about theater as being 2,500 years old, you know, or Greece.
Right.
And in fact, women weren't allowed on stage until maybe the 1600s or so. It's not that women characters weren't written, but women have always been excluded from theater. Well, not always, but for, a couple thousand years, we were excluded from the theater.
And many other things
And many other things as well.
Right.
But it's interesting today. There's definitely, I'm going to get to answer your question, but
that's
there is an inequality still in terms of the representation or the presence of women as playwrights, as performers, as directors, and yet at the same time, women are the largest percentage of ticket buyers and audience members are women. Women are supporting theater in very large numbers. So there's that small, bit of a conflict. And I think it's just because, women love theater and women love stories of different kinds and don't necessarily discriminate about who's writing the story, but that's just something to keep in mind. The other thing is that we publish at TCG, we're a big publisher of plays, and our publisher sometimes talks about how we're in a golden age of playwriting being led by women. There are so many remarkable women writing plays these days. And I think, yes, there's some, Beth Henley coming on the scene, Marcia Norman, some of these writers who just really rocked it and really brought powerful work to the stage and influenced other women to write and also introduced audiences to women's voices in a really big way. And also, I just have to mention that there are some teachers who have really influenced playwriting. For instance, Paula Vogel taught quite a few of the women, like, Sarah Rule and Lynn Nottage and a variety of women who are writing today who have been incredibly successful and prolific. So
Yeah, another way to look at it is if you consider, I mean, you can go back to the 1890s if you want, but if you consider that modern American playwriting started with O'Neill in, say, the 1920, try to think of a significant woman playwright between 1920 and 1960. Lillian Hellman is probably the only one. Now, there are others who wrote plays,
right.
But to talk about a consistent career, one playwright,
right. mm-hmm.
and compare it to now, when, as Teresa says and Jacqueline says, our leading playwrights, you could argue that the leading young playwrights that are writing today are mostly women, mm-hmm. mostly. Amy Herzog, Allegria.
Kiara.
Sarah Rule, Teresa Rebeck. Yep.
Annie Baker.
There are more promising Jacqueline
Lawton.
Right. But look at the people who are at Arena, who are in that young, in your program. Most of them are women, aren't they? I
mean, well, we're nicely divided down the middle, so it's.
But I bet she had to make more of an effort to get men into that program to keep it equal than she did to get women, which would have been the effort 20 years ago
to find
enough women
to
make
fun that.
Do I find what to be true?
That
which part?
Women are becoming the dominant force in playwriting?
I can agree with that statement. I think that women have a very powerful position, voice, and visibility right now in theater, and I really want to credit the work that TCG is doing about bringing this conversation forward in a very specific, clear, and supportive way of all artists that are holding space. There are a lot of people who can tell stories and tell stories really well about a variety of cultures. But what I think is so unique, because of the publishing work that's being done, because of all the conferences and events that are held, we're having conversations around gender parity and equity in a way that is allowing, you can no longer say that this isn't happening, that women are not being represented in certain circles and spaces. So because of that, people are having to make conscious, visible decisions to represent women more. So I would say that yes, I know more female playwrights I live in DC. I know more female playwrights in the DC area than I know male playwrights. I know more women playwrights who are getting work done, moving forward, than I do male playwrights.
I mean, one of the things, I'll just say why I started with the 1890s, that's the weird time to start, was because that was when the first studies were done about women in theater that I found. And then it showed that the vast majority of people who watch plays were women.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when women started exploding into the world as actors. It's really exploded. Uh-huh. As women's rights movement was moving.
Sure, sure.
So that's
sure.
part of it. But the other part of that is, you know, it was interesting. There was a study that was done by The Guardian in England. I don't know if you saw the study, but it ended up with this thing called 2-to-1. And what that meant was that that men had two times as many jobs as women in every aspect of theater. Mm-hmm. Design, set design, mm-hmm. playwriting, directing, producing.
Yeah.
That, and so, I mean, how real is that now? This came out 2 years ago. How real is that?
That's real.
Right?
Yeah, and I there are studies done every so many years that show whether it's 2-to-1 or 3-to-1, it's definitely not equal.
Yeah, we're not in equity.
And one of the things that at my organization that we've really been invested in, and Jackie's been a huge partner on this, is looking at the ways that our society institutionalizes inequity. So, or racism, and how the theater community has inadvertently replicated some of that.
Right.
And now theater, we always think of ourselves as being idealistic and wanting to change the world through the work. So how can we let ourselves replicate weaknesses in society? So we've really been proactively trying to look at race and gender and how we really proactively make change, and it requires conversation. It requires theaters, people in decision-making positions, just facing that they need to be very proactive in trying to make that change, whether it has to do with gender equity or racial and ethnic equality.
And one of the things you were saying the other day was, as you said, several years nominating plays for the Tonys.
Yes,
right.
I was a Tony nominator. A tough job. But somebody's got to do it. I had to see every show that opened on Broadway for 3 years.
That's a tough job.
It was a lot of fun.
But you were saying then, you were giving your analysis that we were on the phone about what you saw in terms of women.
The years I was doing it, I found it very interesting that, yes, there were definitely fewer women represented as directors and playwrights, but also in the role ensemble roles. Because, you know, you look at principal roles in productions, and especially in musicals and so on, but in all productions, and then there are supporting roles and ensembles. Right. And in the supporting roles and ensemble roles, there were always many, many, many more roles for men than women. Mm-hmm. And there are some playwrights, actually. Katori Hall, who's a playwright, many of you may be aware of her writing, she said that she's a young African-American playwright, and she said she started as an actor, and she became a playwright because she couldn't find roles for young women of color. She had to take that on, and she names a number of other writers who did the same thing. So
I did that.
Same.
I did that very same thing. I did that. I made that decision in undergrad.
Because
I went to University of Texas at Austin and had a really phenomenal experience. I did undergrad and graduate work there. And I had gotten a part in Circe, an adaptation of Medea, got the part of Circe, and everyone was really excited. And so I went for the next round of auditions, and I got the part of Tituba. And I was like, it was like, okay, well, then you can also play the maid. And like, I hold the belief, the strong belief, that every person on this planet deserves to have their story told. They don't all deserve a Bravo reality TV show, but they do deserve to have their story told. And I think if you're telling the story of a maid who was working really hard to support her family and uplift her community, that is a powerful, important story to be told. I was not being cast in those powerful, strong, important roles, and that frustrated me beyond anything. And so my determination to continue forward, to make a change, make a difference, and not just boo-hoo and cry and be upset about it, was I'll just start writing them. I'll just start writing strong, complex, powerful women across cultures, not just African-American, so that someone coming after me will not have to go through that. And that's really, I think, about what success and change is about. It's what you do better for that next generation coming up so that they don't have to go through what it is that you went through. And, you know, thank goodness to Lorraine Hansberry and to all the people whose legacy I write in, because without them, and for organizations that are supporting and uplifting women, because without them I wouldn't even be able to make that kind of a statement and do something about it. So.
And everything you're saying about women, excuse me, is also true of African-Americans in theater. I mean, think of the influence of August Wilson on African-American theater and playwrights, Latino, Asian writers. Yeah. I mean, you look in the history of American drama for an Asian writer or a Hispanic writer before the last 20 years, you can't find one. And yet, you know, theater is probably more closely allied to what goes on in our society than fiction or poetry or anything. And that's what's going on in our society. I mean, white men, of which Mark and I are the only two up here, are in a minority in this culture, both with respect to sex and heritage. And soon to be even more of them. And theater is going to reflect that. It's slow, though. I mean, if you look at Naomi's little program note, look at that survey taken in 2009 when plays were submitted to theaters under a man's name and a woman's name and saw what those theaters did. It hasn't, you know, it ain't magical. It ain't going to happen that quickly.
Right around the same time that study was done, there was a look at, I don't think it was in the same study, but there was a look at the ticket revenue from plays, whether written by men or women, and women came out ahead.
Yeah, well, that's what she says in this note, that the women represent the majority of the audience, but they are not up on the stage as prominent.
So it seems to me that I always had this belief that revolutions bubble up from under rather from the top. And the revolution in theater, in some ways, a lot of women directors were interviewed in the New York Times last year. And one of the things that several of them said was that working outside the New York arena, they weren't really aware of all the stuff in New York, because they were only there sometimes to work, but they were always working, and they were always working in regional theater. They're always working around the country. We haven't stopped working, they say. So is that where it's... Do you think? Do we think that's where it's coming from? Coming from the everyman's, coming from theaters like this around America. This is where
face it,
change is taking place.
Theater in America isn't in New York. It's at everyman. It's at every community in the United States. It's TCG. I mean, she's the head of the most important organization in American theater.
So what do you think? Is that where it's coming from? Are you seeing stronger, vaster, deeper changes there than we're seeing in places like Broadway?
Yes.
Oh, definitely. Yes.
If you say Broadway, yes, absolutely. Yeah, the resident theaters around the country are cultivating the writers and cultivating the directors and designers who eventually, in some cases, receive a Broadway production or are hired to do a commercial show. But definitely, I mean, TCG has 500 member theaters around the country, and these are everyman, center stage, arena stage, large, small, rural, urban, and they're all really trying to develop writers and develop artists for the future, and sometimes sharing those artists.
Yeah.
You know, it's an ecology, really. And there are New York theaters that are very involved as well, but I think, you know, the commercial theater is often very focused on what is it that we can produce that's going to, you know, sell the most tickets,
right,
that's eventually
going
to recoup its original investment. But there have been some risk takers, too. August Osage County, when it came in from Steppenwolf, that was, you know, directed by Anna Shapiro. That was, you know, that was a bit of a risk, but it ended up doing extremely well. Now it's a film. Sarah Rules in the Next Room, or the Vibrator play, which was done on Broadway and did very well.
Right.
You know, really wonderful, wonderful material, but you wouldn't necessarily have thought this is going to end up on Broadway.
I want to ask another question, our conversation on the phone before this, but first, I think Broadway is also a place where, I mean, come to a theater like this, and the theaters in this community and other communities around the country, you don't have to worry about maybe missing your mortgage payment or your rent to buy a theater ticket.
Correct, yes.
I mean, Broadway prices are absurd, but I mean, just absurd. But one of the things you commented on, and Jackson did as well in a different way about this play, so I want to kind of move this and extrapolate from that about the theater community in general, mm-hmm. was you were taken with the way this play handled, the way she handled race in this play.
Yes. Okay, yes. Yeah. So even when I read it back in undergrad and then being reminded of it in production, and this was actually the very first time I've ever seen Crimes of the Heart on stage, so that was really exciting. I really appreciate the way that Hindley handles the situation around race in this play. So as the sisters are talking about this affair, this illicit affair that takes place, the first concern is, isn't he 8 years old? Like, what do you mean? And it's like, no, that was all those years ago. He's now a young man, and quite a young man. Let's look at these pictures, you know? And there's never a conversation about, oh, but you slept with a Negro, or you know, she doesn't take it there. She doesn't take it to this, although that is around. We understand that the impact of racism is around, and perhaps even the husband, that's part of his charge and his anger, although I think that he would have been fairly upset had she slept with anyone, regardless of the race. And I really appreciate how the sisters, there's no judgment on who she slept with, or even really that she slept with someone else. I mean, I've always found that I appreciate it. I just really appreciate the way that the conversation around race is handled.
Yeah, but I think that's, you know, I'm certainly glad we're talking about this issue, but I think this play transcends this issue and the whole question of women in theater, because ultimately it's about three human beings.
Absolutely.
And one of the things, it's about a lot of human beings, not three, but I think one of the great strengths of Beth's plays is that they are non-judgmental.
Yes.
That they, and by the way, that I think is the great strength of great plays in general, is that they are non-judgmental. I mean, it's much harder to write, it's much easier to write a play where the black hat guy is easily spotted and the white hat guy is easily spotted. I mean, even Iago has a motive, remember. Mm-hmm. And so in this play, there is no judgment at all of anybody. I mean, the whole play is really built around, as you started by saying, Jacqueline, very well, the sisters in some ways being ashamed for things that ultimately at the end of the play, they come to realize they shouldn't be ashamed of.
Right, right.
And in a way, that's substituting their own. I remember when I read this play first, I thought, this ending is a little strange, because I read it on the page. It's the perfect ending, I now realize, because what they have at the end of the play is each other. What they have is that bond. And
absolutely.
I thought this production made that so beautiful. I mean, one of the things I loved about this production is those three women seemed like sisters to me.
Mm.
And that's absolutely necessary for this play. I don't, you know, maybe they didn't start out feeling like sisters, but after doing it for several weeks, I'm sure they have.
Mm-hmm.
And that transcends everything in this play. There's no judgment. I mean, look, that's what this play is about. I mean, if your brother does something awful, your judgment of him is different because he's your brother.
He's your brother, and there's a
good and so
yeah.
All judgments are, to some extent, neutralized because of the situation. But I think you're absolutely right. I mean, all of Beth's plays, I just saw the Jacksonian in New York, and he said he saw it. Racism is all behind that play, the Southern racist society, but it's very much in the background. It's there, but it's very much in the background.
Well, and it's handled so delicately, and which is what I appreciate when I say that the way that race is handled, it doesn't push the stereotype, and yet you can consider, so what's going to happen to this young man? And the lawyer says, we've sent him up north, we thought that was the best thing for him to do. Because we know, had this young man stayed in the South and that story had come out, what would happen to him?
Right.
But it doesn't get, it. We don't have to talk about it because we know, we hold the understanding of it. And she understands that her audience is smart,
mm-hmm.
right? Like she mm-hmm. really understands that her audience is going to come to it with that deep understanding. So she just has to write those few lines to give you that context. And I find that so delicious.
Well, this is something that I think is important, because I think I was thinking about what you were talking about on the phone, we don't have pocket watches anymore. We have cell phones. I'm going to look and see what time it is. Got it. we were talking about, you know, if there's inequity in terms of gender when it comes to playwriting and roles, and the inequity around race is even deeper in our society. And one of the things that TCG is going to look at is that in the coming year. We were talking about that.
Coming years.
Years. So we can talk a bit about that, and also that I think that as you were describing what you saw in that part of the play, what it made me realize is, think about it, is all these women writers you see coming up,
mm-hmm.
Black and white, and whatever ethnicity they come from, that is kind of the way it begins. This is an important part, even unknowing to the rest of society, because most of society doesn't go to theater, unfortunately. But theater has an effect beyond just the people who see it. The plays have an effect because they affect other mediums. They affect the way things are done. So this, in some ways, is this beautiful subversive act taking place at the moment with plays, in terms of changing how we think about race and gender in the world we have.
Absolutely. This is such a big topic because, and I'm going to veer off a little, just because I think we are at such a powerful and interesting moment in our country and in the world right now with respect to changing demographics and changing, there's quite a bit of discussion now about income inequality and young people and what they're being given when they, you know, as they sort of enter the world and enter the workforce and, you know, what kind of education exists and so on. I just still believe that theater, and of course, technology,
yeah.
and the fact that most people are doing everything on their phone. Theater still is a really, it's a powerful form, and I think young people who are in schools really deserve the opportunity to be brought to, or have theater brought to them. And it can't be forgotten. I see so many kids in New York who, the opportunity to go, to learn how to express themselves through theater, but also see professional theater, changes their lives. And so when we talk about some of the remarkable work that's being written today, and work by a really diverse group of writers, so we're getting all these different stories, But sometimes the distribution system through our resident theaters doesn't necessarily reach the audience that most, that could benefit from seeing that work. I don't want to say could most benefit, because sure, I think sure. everybody who sees the theater and who chooses to come and talk about it and share it benefits in some way. So I think there's a big question about how we take this, the wonderful stories and the wonderful writing that's happening now, and figure out how we share it more broadly among generations, among different, you know, people in our society, so, and age groups. So that's one thing. The thing that we're really focused on at TCG right now is looking more at theaters and their staffs and leadership structures, because what we discovered is that in terms of, in our member theaters, it's about 50-50, close to 50-50 in terms of men and women at the in leadership roles. The larger the theater becomes, the more men there are.
How shocking.
Okay, so it's like in the largest theaters, 20 to 25% of the leadership roles are held by women. Maybe one or two of those are held by women of color. So that's what I was talking about when I talked about, you know, how the inequality is, it's very noticeable when you look at gender, but it's even more noticeable when you look at race and when we're talking about leadership. Now, we also have to take into consideration the fact that we want good leaders, and, you know, we don't want to be critical of people who are white men, for instance, running theaters and say you shouldn't be, you know, because, you know, there are so many great leaders out there. That's what makes it complicated, because we want to create more opportunity for people of all backgrounds, but at the same time, you know, there's some really fabulous people we love who are running theaters right now who should be in those positions. So what do you do?
Right.
Jeff, how do you see that?
I think it's complex. It's there are oftentimes I hear people calling for a protest of theater. So as season announcements come out, we're always looking to see how many women playwrights are being produced, how many women directors are leading those productions. And then, you know, there are moments where you don't see any women playwrights and you see maybe one or two women directors. And there's often a call for, well, we're going to boycott the theater. We won't come. The power's in our dollars. And that's how we make the stand. And then I look at who's being produced and I'm like, I'm sorry, I want to see that play. He's a remarkable playwright, you know, and I want to experience what that's going to do for me as a human being on this planet, and an artist who's trying to write even better plays the next time out. And that's when you speak about the complexity of this issue. You have great, amazing, phenomenal leaders who deserve to continue the work that they're doing, and how do you make space for potential leaders who, as frightening as this, might not ever get an opportunity because they're looked at as not having enough experience or having enough training, or not, how will they understand, or they'll shift their agenda and it'll only be this kind of play forever. And it is such a complex, challenging issue. And I feel like we're coming at it, it's already in motion, it's been in motion for years. We talk about the systems, the systematics of racism, of gender, of even ability and disability, and like, where are those leaders? Where are leaders of different abilities? And I can only name one who's leading in at the Gift Theater in Chicago, though I'm sure there's hopefully more. So it's complex. I share Teresa's sense of how do you engage, how do you make change happen while still honoring all the good things that are taking place?
Well, Teresa really put her finger on it. The bigger problem really is getting theater to young people. Because we have the role models now. That's what's so important.
Yeah.
As Jacqueline says, we now have, you know, a young Hispanic student has an Hispanic theater person that he or she could model themselves on, but then not getting the opportunity. I mean, people who know me know I'm on this soapbox all the time. When you go to the theater, how many young people do you see in the theater? How many young people do you see at Everyman? Not as many as you'd like, I'm sure. I mean, the average age of your audience, and it's not because, don't give me the admission price argument. These same kids spend as much money, if not more than that, to go hear whatever you want to talk, Mariah Carey, or who, whoever it is. It's not money. It's a cultural thing.
It's cultural.
And if we don't start getting them to the theater younger, and it's too bad because, as I keep saying, you know, the reason Sarah Rule writes is because of Paula Vogel. The reason you write is because of role models you had.
Sure.
And there are ample role models now on stage and writing. And if these kids could see those role models, they might become part of theater.
Absolutely. So it's about exposure, and it's also about creating a habit of art.
Right.
So it's about the idea of, you know, I love that we have student matinees. I love that. But if your parents aren't the ones taking you, like if you go to theater via your school, awesome, great, wonderful. I've been a teaching artist for years, and I love it. I love doing that work. But there's something about when you go with your parents, if your parents are taking you, then you have a model of, oh, well, this is, we can go to football games, we can go to concerts, we can go out to dinner. We do the theater as well. And if we don't have that integrated in, then it's how are you an empty nester?
And every theater person you talk to went to the theater as a young person.
Sure, or had it some
every
way
playwright,
yeah.
Every
yeah.
actor that I've ever interviewed says they started very young. And if you don't, and the other thing is, my daughter is a children's theater teacher, and they do shows for 2 and 3 year old kids. Every kid in that theater is mesmerized by what's going on the stage. There isn't a kid at that age who isn't captivated by theater if you take them in. It's getting them there.
It's getting them there. Yeah.
I think bringing us back to where we were, and folks, by the way, we have like 10, 12 minutes left. If anybody would like to have a quick thought question, and I mean not a great long speech, but have something to throw out to the panelists, there's a microphone right here. You're welcome to come over and have your voice.
You can
heard.
Also shout it out, and we'll repeat.
No. The microphone.
Well,
we have to pick it up. So feel free to come up. So bringing it back to where I think all this is critical. What we've just been talking about, but I'd like to marry over these two last thoughts, which is just how you see in your work the role of women and people of color in theater, changing theater. How does it change perception? How does it change what roles that exist? How does it change what actors can do that is different than what we've had before?
Well, I think it's, I'm the first woman to run TCG. It's a 52-year-old organization. And I think that so what needs to happen is, first of all, when there are opportunities, people who are in a position to make a decision need to make a decision to give a woman an opportunity or a young leader of color an opportunity, whether it's as an artist or as a leader. And then once those people are in position, they also have to make opportunities available to others. So it goes back to the comment that was made earlier about sort of standing on the shoulders of others and also giving to the next generation. So I think that as we have more women in theater and more people of color writing, people of a wide range of diversity that's really representative of our communities, those people need to also think about committing to others. It can't be just about, it's not just about what you want to do and how you want to make your mark. It's about how you can help others as well. And I think, does that seem?
What I think that it does, having more women, having more writers of color tell stories and present people of color on stage, is that it allows you to see me as a human being versus the limited representations that might already be out there. So for instance, I live on Capitol Hill, which is a predominantly white, very wealthy neighborhood. I got a nice little cute, affordable basement loveliness. And I've lived there for 8 years, and so I see the same neighbors for 8 years, and there are still moments when I'm just walking about where women will clutch their purse as I'm walking past. And I'm like, I have seen you and your little dog almost every day for 8 years, but you don't see me. And it's moving beyond colorblindness, because it's not about colorblindness. That's not a real thing. I see you look different from me. I see your culture is different from me. And I appreciate and excite and I want to learn from that difference and grow into that difference. It's a lot of the work we talk about around diversity and inclusion. So it's this idea that a diverse number of people deserve to live in this world, be a part of this world, and we all need to include ourselves in learning from and engaging. And when we can see multiple examples of race, of gender, of class, people of different classes, on stage, on television, and film, then we can start to see each other, relate to each other, learn, engage with each other. And it is so powerful, important, and necessary for the forward progressive survival of this society.
I agree.
I strongly believe that.
And let me just say real quick, Jackson, Jackson was right, I was wrong. I just looked at our mics. You can stand up and speak, the mic will pick you up. I was wrong. Just if you have something to say, the loud projecting voice, please do so, Jackson.
Well, you know, I've seen this play more times than I can even remember. I think I'm right and it hasn't been for a while, which explains what I'm about to say. I think this is the first time I've ever seen it directed by a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember saying to my wife the third or fourth time, how can this play not be directed by a woman? It also would help if they were a Southerner, but let's get the woman up there first. The other thing I was going to say is every time you see a play that you really love, you hear a line that you've never heard before that you realize is so key to the play, and I wrote this down in the dark so I can barely read it. It's a human need to talk about our lives. Now, that line is, you know, I've read that line 100 times seeing this play. And not only is that what this play is about, but that's what we've been talking about up here, because the more people of color, the more people of different genders, the more people of different generations realize that it's a human need to talk about our lives, they will write, whether they will write fiction or whether they will write poetry or hopefully they will write plays. These sisters, all three of them, have that human need, and this play is about their ability to express it eventually. Well, that's what we've been talking about up here, too, and that's what all artists are. And the thing is Jacqueline well knows, because she is a professional playwright, anybody can write. I mean,
sure,
and anybody should write. Everybody has, as you say, has a story to tell. And you've got to make young people believe that their stories are as important as the books they're reading
Absolutely.
In school.
Absolutely.
And that's what it's really about.
Absolutely.
I mean, so this then becomes, I think, part of the conversation we're having today is that the rising tide of women playwrights and playwrights of color in America today could have a profound influence on the culture, American culture in the 21st century. I think, and I agree, more people need to come to theater, but I happen to think the theater also has a power beyond the numbers that go to see it.
Well,
just
because
of the media. So
the
point
is about any form of literature. Ultimately is about the person who's reading or seeing it. I mean, those people up there don't exist. They're in the minds of the playwright. So if it works as this play works, it should reveal to you something about yourself.
Absolutely.
And that's what the great power of art is, to reveal something about yourself. And to walk out, I mean, to convince young people that they can walk out of a theater understanding themselves better rather than knowing what the play is about.
Sure.
It's about them. It's about us. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's what you have to get young people to understand.
So who do you all think are the playwrights now?
Jacqueline Lawton.
Well, she's here already. Jacqueline Lawton thinking. She is. I think Jacqueline Lawton's plays are amazing. I love her work. So I was really very happy to know that you were going to be on this panel today. So I was, I mean that. So, but I'm curious who you all think, and the people you work with, what you've seen, who the women and women of color, in terms of putting plays out, writing now, who are the people that we may be not thinking of that we should be thinking of, or maybe they're already out there.
I think Dominique Marusso.
Were you going to say
her? She wrote Detroit 67, which got a lot of attention.
Oh yeah, I read about that.
She's a wonderful voice. I got to work with her 3 years ago on a play she was writing. It was part of the Kennedy Center Page to Stage Festival. I would say Marcus Gardley, I think, is a playwright who people need to be continuing to pay attention to.
Rada.
Oh, and Tanya's Rada. I mean, that could go on and on.
Yeah.
But, Rada Blank?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. No, she's really...
What's
she's
her name?
Rada Blank.
Rada Blank.
She's also New York-based. But Tanya Sriracha, mm-hmm. She's working on she's a writer for this new HBO TV program called Looking, which is looking at, examines homosexuality, this relationships between homosexuality, and it's like beyond stereotypes. It's like, oh, let's put people on camera, on film. She's done a really great job. Who else would you say? Or
I'm thinking.
Yeah, I know. I feel like...
We talked about Annie Baker and Sarah Ruhl and some of the... I know those are people who have been produced quite a bit, so maybe... and, of course, Susan Laurie Parks and Lynn Nottage and...
Oh, Kara Corthran. Kia Corthran. Yeah, they're both really wonderful.
It's just such a...
There's so many.
I know you're maybe looking more for names of people that people haven't...
Whatever comes to mind, because I think that what you're describing is what we talked about on the phone mm-hmm. the other day, which is that we are in a golden age, in some ways, an explosive age mm-hmm. of young playwrights who are women and people of color that are theaters like this, not theaters like this. That's where the plays are coming, and they're exploding onto local communities. I think that's on off-Broadway and off-off-Broadway.
Yes.
Well, the exciting thing is that a play will be written this season by a playwright that none of us have ever heard of that will just astonish us.
Right.
And it's as likely to be by a woman or a person of minority culture, probably more likely to be written by a woman or a minority, what we called a minority culture mm-hmm. in this country. I mean, look at who's won the last few Pulitzer Prizes. It's all been either women or
non-white people.
It's interesting that you mentioned Ayad Akhtar, who received the Pulitzer last year.
Right.
And he's unbelievable.
He is unbelievable as a playwright, as a novelist.
As a novelist, as an actor.
Oh my gosh. It's just a person to sit, spend time with. Like if you go to TCG's website, there's mm-hmm. a speech that he delivered as part of the conference last year. And you want to close all your windows and doors, turn off your phone, and just be present and engaged. This man, he's remarkable. I read his book in 2 days. I couldn't. Mm-hmm.
Ayad, A-Y-A-D, Akhtar.
He's phenomenal.
I just want to say, first of all, I want to thank all of you for coming out tonight. I want to thank those of you who are listening now, either on radio, on the web, or watching on the web, this World of the Play. We want you to come out, especially if you're close to Baltimore and Washington, Philadelphia, to join us here at Everyman Theater for every play of the season when we do these productions. And to talk about what theater does for us. It's been a pleasure. First time I've met anybody in this panel, so it's been incredibly good to meet Jackson Breyer, Therese Eyerling, and Jacqueline Lawton. Thank you all so much for the work that you do, and for being here with us today, and thank you all for coming out on this lovely day to join this conversation for the Word of the Play. Good to have you with us.
Great. Yeah.